Welcome into the latest edition of Serie Awesome. Milan finish out the year in dramatic fashion to remain unbeaten and hold on to their lead in the Serie A table heading into the winter break. Inter are plodding along and getting things done. We look into their run to the break and ask whether they can carry their form into the new year. Juve lose 6 points in one day and go from perhaps their best display of the Pirlo era to their worst. And even though Napoli failed to win either game they played in the last two rounds, they did notch one big victory. Their appeal to replay the match against Juventus. We discuss this and more in the latest edition of the show. Hello and welcome into our Christmas holiday special, Serie Awesome. What a midweek round, Matteo.
So I don't even know where to start. Juventus dropping 6 points, Milan finishing top of the table with the most incredible late game winner by Theo Hernandez. So many talking points, but I just want to say this, and I want to emphasize it. Serie A is the most fun league in Europe. Digest it, take some time, accept it. Facts.
These two don't need to digest that. They already know this.
No, it's definitely like the most fun league. I think it's the second best league right now in terms of like tactics and ideas and what's going
first,
on. And
how many... First best league. None of this second.
Well, people keep telling me it's the Premier League. I agree with you, Nikki. I mean, I've always loved this league more than anyone because it's always a surprise. You never know what's going to happen. I even think people like, I mean, clubs like Spezia and Crotone are interesting. And I'm, you know...
Listen, there is no league in Europe. I'm not going to say the world because I don't follow South American football. There may be leagues that have more compelling title races than this, but don't tell me about the Premier League. We have the two Milan clubs, Inter and Milan, two of the historic clubs of European and definitely world football, going head to head, 1 point between them as we head into the winter break. You've got Roma behind them, the big club from the capital city. You've got Juventus, who have won 9 titles in a row, currently 10 points off the pace, but still, who's going to bet against them being part of this title race before the end? You've got Sassuolo, who've got the tiniest budget, representing a town of 90,000 people in the top four going into the winter people. Break, playing beautiful football. Come off it. This is the best league in the world, guys. I'm not having it.
Oh,
I've gone
so
from
glad.
Europe to the world in a second.
In the world. Okay, let's get started with probably the biggest story of the last two rounds. And it's Juventus where we begin today. Because no sooner were they getting praise for their best performance under Pirlo than it all came undone against Fiorentina. And this came on the same day that they discovered that Napoli had won their appeal to replay the match that they did not turn up for in October. So 6 points dropped in a day, Nikki. Not the greatest day for Juve this season.
Certainly not. And the verdict off the pitch, Juventus have always sort of officially said they're indifferent to it. They said Paratici, the chief football officer, said, look, we're extraneous to this. We'll play when we're told to play, even though we were ready to play in October. But on the pitch, this was a real bad result going into the winter break. And it's interesting because we've talked about on this show perhaps some signs that things were going better for Andrea Pirlo in recent weeks. This game, look, you can say it's a weird one because Juan Cuadrado gets sent off. And I mean, that card is as red as they come for me. I know it was initially a yellow before VAR overturned it. And subsequent to that, a lot of decisions that could have gone Juventus' way didn't. Borja Valero certainly should have gone off at the start of the second half for a second booking. 2 penalty decisions, I think very possibly both penalties that Juventus didn't get. The Cristiano Ronaldo incident, only question is whether his the contact is outside the box. It's very, very close. Then you get Dudonkowski, the Fiorentina keeper, putting an elbow in that on Bernardeschi that I thought also should have been a penalty. That was a 2-0, but still, there are circumstances in this game. On the other hand, Juventus gave up a terrible goal right at the start of that game, completely suckered in by a fairly simple ruse from Prandelli, letting Ribéry play in a deeper role, play that pass from deep. Great pass by Ribéry. And I think, honestly, for that entire first half, this team that is coming off, again, 9 consecutive titles had just zero composure. You're playing as a Fiorentina team that hasn't won in 2 months, that hasn't won at all under Cesare Prandelli. And frankly, we're talking about decisions that could have gone another way. Federico Chiesa could have, on another day, got a red card, I thought, for the challenge he put studs into. He didn't even get a yellow card in the end, but it was not a good challenge. And to me, was indicative of a team whose mindset was not right for this game and a team that did not play well in this game until maybe a little bit from Cristiano Ronaldo in the second half.
So why wasn't their mindset right? Do you think that that news did affect them going into this game?
That's a complicated question. Obviously, without being in the locker room, you can't say for certain how players are affected. There was certainly one thing that was very disruptive, which is Adrian Rabiot was supposed to start and he had to serve a suspension because that game he had... I find it very odd that he was allowed to serve a suspension in a game that didn't happen, but he'd served his suspension nominally against Napoli. Because the Napoli game was cancelled, he was then having to serve his suspension in this game. The sending off then forces Pirlo to take off Aaron Ramsey, so it's two midfielders out of your initial starting three. But in a broader sense, I just don't think Pirlo set them up very well.
Yeah, and I'm seeing excuses. Ah, Rabiot didn't play, as if now Juve are Rabiot dependent. That he's not even, we're not even sure if this guy's a starter. Now suddenly it's like, oh, Rabiot's not there. Of course we couldn't win. Juve are supposed to take care of business in open play. Juve is too good to get these excuses saying, oh, the referee, Borja Valero, should have been sent off and we should have had a penalty. That may be true, but you're taking on a Fiorentina side that had not won under Cesare Prandelli, that's been an absolute mess this whole season, even dating back to the years before. Juventus wouldn't have needed those excuses about the referee if they actually defended. This was one of the worst defensive performances that I can remember even seeing ever from Leo Bonucci. Shocking display, the way that Vlahovic just got in behind so easily. The own goal by Alexandro, it seemed like players were out of position. This did not look like the Juve that I can remember for nine straight seasons. And I feel like we've said this so many times on this pod that they just don't seem Juve-like. They've had those moments here or there in the last round. I even said this was the most Juve-like Juventus performance, where you just feel like no matter what, they're the, you know, the big bad bullies. They're going to win. They're going to find a way. But so many other times, it's just a team that has had this amazing spine, maybe the best defense in Europe, that you knew if they went up one goal to nil, they would win the game. You had no chance. You had maybe one chance all day against them, and you better have made the best out of that one, because you're not going to get another chance against that defense. This is not that team anymore. And so many times, they just don't really even look like a unit. I'm struggling to figure out who they are.
Now, but Mina, everybody was saying completely different things after that 4-0 win over Parma, saying this is the best performance of the season under Pirlo.
Yeah, and also this is the team that has conceded the least amount of goals in the league so far. So I do think that to a certain level, I don't think all the defensive mechanisms are in place. And there are some problems over there. And I don't know what happened to Leon Bonucci, because he had literally the worst game that I've ever seen. But this is a guy who's done it for Juventus and done it for Italy for a long time. It can happen that you have a very bad game. It's not, you know, this isn't Rafael Varane doing it over and over again. Anyway, this is not the Liga podcast. What I'm trying to say is that I think this was a bad game. I don't think there are any excuses, but sometimes I do feel like Juve's reputation gets in the way. Everyone keeps saying this is a team that deserves to be at the very top, that has the best squad. Who out of those midfielders, and I'm going to count Ramsey, Rabiot, Arta, Bentancur, and McKinney, would get into either Inter or Milan's midfield, to be frank? Really, who is the one that you would turn around and be like, oh yeah, this is a guy that you build around in midfield? They're all kind of terrible, and they're all either free... They're all, I mean, look, I love McKinney. Don't get me wrong. I love all of them on their own day. Yeah. But none of them are like, wow, leaders. You know, you look at all of them. They're either free, very cheap, or that's it. They're just free or very cheap. Like, as in, McKinney is the only one that was really paid for, to be very frank. Arthur was a financial exchange to suit both clubs. And the other three arrived for free. Bentancur, Rabiot, and Ramsey, which is very high wages.
And Arthur had a value, the valuation was like 70 million euro. I know that Pjanic,
because
like
they 60, did that on purpose to get their money
course,
back.
But Arthur is not like some guy that just came over from Brazil. This is someone who played meaningful games for Barcelona. Weston McKennie, I think, has actually been their best midfielder. Bentancur last season was an assist machine. They just haven't been performing as a unit.
He's never been that great. I think Bentancur's always been highly inflated. I think they're all very good. When there's a lot of support, I think they're all very good. I think if you are asking them to rise up against sort of like a collapse or a team that presses high up the pitch, there isn't a leader in there like they used to be when there was Pirlo or after that. I think on their own, if they're providing support, they're all very, very good players, but none of which I will turn around and say is a Benacer, is a Barella, is even a Sensi, you know? So in that kind of sense, I don't think it's great. Now, looking at the team, I think Pirlo made some disastrous mistakes, some of which are in hindsight. I would never have taken off Ramsey against Fiorentina. I would have always tried to ensure that the midfield is full of people in there. And the fact that it was only Bentancur at the end was just very stupid, which is why the collapse ended up happening. I don't understand why Pirlo ends up sort of referring to... sort of, I don't know whether it's logic or pragmatism. Okay, let's see. Like, I've got to take off a player now and put in more of a defender. So I'll take off a midfielder in Ramsey. That's not going to be my choice. Then it's, I'm going to take off Morata to bring in Bernardeschi and cover the field better. Again, not my choice. You have to go on who's the best player at the moment. This is not how I would have gone about it. He does make some rather bizarre choices. Having said all of this, after Parma, they were splendid. And honestly speaking, I think that was the best performance of any team in Serie A. And again, it is Parma, so I don't want to speak too highly of it. But there's been so many good performances, so much unpredictable play going forward, an attack that is whizzing past. There is a mentality issue in there. And I don't know what's going on, because the team was very nervous coming out of the blocks against Fiorentina. Their passing game was terrible to watch. There was lots of turnovers. I'm not sure what's happening in that sense. I don't know whether it's about filling the team with a sense of calm, a sense of we've got this, arrogance, but at the same time, having the humility to realize you have to work very hard, because you can never underestimate any team in Serie A. Fiorentina will always raise their game against Juventus. Any other team, most of them will raise their game against Juventus because of their reputation. But I think that it can happen that Bonucci has a bad day. I don't know why. I turn around and I look at this team, and if you are capable of the performances that they are against Barcelona, against, even I thought they were very good against Atalanta and Lazio. They lost it at the end. I don't think that they were bad. I look at the way that they play their football, and I think there's a lot of good there. So I'm not so worried. And if they are to lose the Scudetto, let it be. It's been 9 years in a row, man. Let someone else win it.
I think there's like something I really want to say about this with Pirlo, though, because I think some of the points you raised, to me, definitely don't absolve Juventus. The midfield, I agree with you. Construction-wise, it does just look worse than Milan's midfield. Inter, maybe both, but... let's not pretend Juventus haven't spent money. They've spent money on Kulusevski. They've spent money on Bernardeschi, actually, not so long ago. They spent money on Chiesa this summer. They spent money on De Ligt. If you wanted to build your midfield, you can spend money there. But I think that we've given Pirlo a lot of the time a free ride. And there are a couple of reasons in this game particularly I don't think it's right to anymore. First of all, that opening goal, literally one day before that, the match, Pirlo was asked at his press conference about Fiorentina players to worry about. He names two players, Ribery and Vlahovic. And in 3 minutes, you've got Ribery passing the ball to Vlahovic for your opening goal. So what have you been communicating about these players that hasn't got through to your players? Secondly, his post-game press conference, when he was suggesting that, well, maybe Milan and Inter are the favourites. If Maurizio Sarri had said those words last season, he would have been crucified. He would have been hung from the roof of Juventus Stadium, and everyone would have said, look, he hasn't got the right winning mentality. He hasn't got the right attitude to be here. But when Pirlo says it, it's okay. I don't know. I think that was a comment that another manager would not have got away with.
Nicky, this goes back to the thesis that everyone went nuts for, this thesis that came out. It's like every manager has a pretty impressive thesis. I have no life, so I go and I read these theses, and they're all very impressive. I mean, you'd convince yourself that Pepe Iaquini is a tactical genius, that he's the new Pep Guardiola, if you read his thesis. And what Pirlo's doing, it's just because it came out and it was transcribed into English that everyone went nuts. But it was hard at first to really go at Pirlo, because I think he was thrust into a situation where it was almost like a lose-lose, right? That no matter what, you win the Scudetto, it's almost like an afterthought. It's all about the Champions League. You have Cristiano Ronaldo. But to now suggest, and I am 100% agreeing with you here, Nicky, to suggest that now Milan, the youngest average age team in Serie A, that people would have signed off at the beginning of the season for them just to finish fourth place, that they're now suddenly, with all these, this band of players of under 21s, that they're suddenly now the favorites, when you have Cristiano Ronaldo, who you're paying 35 million euro net a season so you can win the Champions League, and now these guys with an average age of 21, they're the favorites? Give me a break. Yeah, but, 22, oh, 21, on, whatever, it doesn't on, matter. This is, they're half the is, age of
no,
Buffon.
I'm sorry. This is starting to get really tedious of hearing you have Ronaldo, so you should be winning. Well, where's Barcelona? They're winning nothing. You know, just they have Messi, who's apparently so much better than Ronaldo.
But we can't
you
even
can't always
Barcelona's
go by the fact
sorry,
that there's
on,
Ronaldo,
compare,
so they need to win.
Can't I don't, even compare the two. Juve have won 9 straight. Barcelona have been a mess now for a few years.
Nine straight because the team... because Serie A has been terrible. Serie A has been not terrible in many sense, but not as challenging as it has been now. There's Antonio Conte and Stefano Pioli, who've been there for longer than one season and have built up a certain level of consistency. You're talking about a coach that's had 14 games and you're judging him to be one that needs to have learned all along. And of course, he has Ronaldo. He should win every single game. No, it's not that easy. I think we've just said Serie A is the most exciting and challenging league at the moment. Right now, it's difficult. And he's won his Champions League group, one that included Messi, and not just Messi, a great Barcelona side, to be frank, just with
they
a terrible
should
coach.
Have gone but through.
Fine. Well, you know what? They had Dynamo Kiev, Shakhtar Donetsk, which is second in the Ukrainian league, and Inter couldn't win over them. So let's be honest, I'm sorry, but there is a lot of good in what they're doing. And I think that continuing to say, well, they have Ronaldo, well, we also have lots of other teams. Milan shouldn't be where they are. They are overperforming. We've always said the coach is wonderful. And it's wonderful that they are overperforming, but that doesn't mean that we start crucifying all the other sides. I think, and I said from the start, they shouldn't hire Pirlo when you have Ronaldo, because it should be about winning everything. Having said all of these things, if there is good, and again, in what I'm saying, and it has been 14 games, Pirlo's not going to be a guy that's going to come in and do what Allegri and Sarri managed. And nor should he be expected to do that. He's never had a career in coaching. Like you said, he has a thesis and that's all there is. And so you can blame him all you like, but the truth is that he should never have been hired. And yet I still stand by the decision, because I'd rather have a good Juventus that's going to build towards another cycle, lose a Scudetto now to Milan or Pioli or whoever, but at least do something special. And when it comes to Europe, I still think that they are where they're supposed to be.
Mina, when they hired Pirlo, I think they knew exactly what they were getting. They said it, that he's been part of this Juventus DNA. He's been a Juventino since he retired, that his heart was always there, that he knows the team so well. They had to have known that this could have been an issue, right? Because if you have a team that's expected to win everything. But when you get Ronaldo, forget whether it's fair or not, but when you have Cristiano Ronaldo, a lot of people say he's the best player of all time. When you have him, you're expected to do certain things. That's just the fact of the matter. It's not me saying it. This is 100% the responsibility and the pressure that comes with having a generational superstar to win everything in Europe. That's why they got Cristiano Ronaldo. So Serie A should almost be like an afterthought now, where it's like, yeah, we're favorites to win Serie A. We've won 9 straight. I still think that Juventus before the start of the season, I still think that they had the most overall talent in the league. I'd say Inter was a close second, but I put Juventus right there at the top. Even the midfield underperforming, but you look at the midfield individually, there's still some pretty damn good players there. Like Arthur was supposed to be the one that would bring what Juventus was missing,
again,
and it hasn't
arrived.
Worked out.
Matteo, he just arrived. You're looking at teams that have already got a foundation.
How many players have just arrived? I mean, look at Victor Osimhen.
McKinney,
so
the one that you're naming,
have
all
that
just
have arrived.
Arrived.
And they've
I don't
done
care
amazing.
Who just arrived.
Moratis
Juventus'
arrived
entire mentality, arrived. Juventus' entire identity for years has been just win, baby. That's it. It doesn't matter who just arrived. You're supposed to win. That's what Juventus have built their entire identity on.
I just think that you can make all these judgments after they play Milan Inter. They could be the worst team that I've ever seen
play. January will be interesting.
In January, you can judge all of this. But I just think that it's just, firstly, you're talking about 10 points. They still haven't played Napoli. And really, frankly, based on this, Napoli, I think they'd smash them 8-0 any point. Yeah. But so we don't know. It's not 10 points yet. It could well be 7. And it could be less when they play these two sides. Once they do, and you can definitively say, yes, they're really making terrible mistakes and they shouldn't because they've got Ronaldo. It doesn't mean if they have no one else, you know, then fine. But I just think, like, let's just wait a season. We always talk about the fact that Atalanta did so well to wait for Gasperini. We always talk about teams that show patience. And maybe you're right. I mean, as long as Juve are happy with Pirlo, as long as they're happy with the project, then let's just wait and see what happens. I don't think we should be sacking coaches just yet.
Things are going a little bit better at Milan. They needed a victory to remain top, to end out 2020 and prevent Inter from taking top spot from them. And they got it with a very dramatic late winner. They had a mounting injury crisis, Nikki, but it seemed to matter very little.
I think it's extraordinary. You're talking about a team that's missing its complete spine, missing its top goal scorer in Zlatan Ibrahimovic, missing both of its starting central midfielders in Frank Kessié and Ismaïl Benacer, and missing Kjaer at centre-back and his backup, Gabbia, at centre-back. So that's literally, you can draw a line through the middle of the team of just everything that's missing, the entire backbone of the team. And yet they came away with a really big, important win against Lazio. It wasn't perfect. They did blow a two-goal lead. But I think in the context of that injury list, in the context of this team, which is, this wasn't the youngest 11, but has fielded 11s of 22 years old, that had none of the expectations to be in this title race when the season began, and which has now gone 26 games unbeaten in Serie A, going back to the first wave of the coronavirus pandemic when all of football got locked down. They haven't lost a game since we came back. They've scored also now, I think it's at least two goals in the last 15 games, which no team has done in Europe's top five leagues. Since the 40s, no team has done this. I think it's astonishing. And I think that the nature of this win with Theo Hernandez getting that goal in injury time after you thought you'd blown it to get first spot ahead of Inter as well, ahead of your rival, your local rival. It may still mean nothing. It may be that in the new year, things change. There's a lot of season left, more than half of the season. But at the very least, I feel like it's this huge momentum boost to a club that already had a lot. And also, I just think it's fitting because this has been the team of 2020, frankly, in Italy. It certainly has been since the lockdown. And it kind of just feels right that they should end the season on top, end the year, not the season. It's a very different thing, end the year on top.
It is. They hope to end the season on top like this. But it's interesting that you mentioned that as well. I think we have the tendency to forget that because the seasons have started a little later across Europe, we're not quite halfway through the season, as we often are almost at this point in a normal season. But it's a completely different feeling for Milanisti right now, Matteo.
Milanisti deserve this. It has been a nightmare now for nearly a decade. I think of the failed Chinese ownership, Mirabelli and Fassone, all the overhyped, overpaid, overrated players that they've brought on with no direction, constantly switching managers, getting managers with zero experience, a team that had no continuity for such a long time, the second most successful team in Europe with seven Champions League titles that couldn't even get into the top six. It's been so bad. So for Milan to now do it, with this incredibly likable squad that's so young and so built for the future and that you could see is on this amazing upwards trajectory. The work that Ivan Gazidis has done in the end, you know, with all the jokes that look at Arsenal that they bought young, then they sold the players in their prime. This team is winning right now. They're first. They're beating the big teams in Serie A. They're doing this with the youngest team. And I love the comments from Stefano Pioli after the game, basically saying that, you know what? Not having fans at San Siro, that's actually helped the team. That's made them relaxed. Now it's no longer the case. Now they're used to it. They're used to winning. But in the beginning, he attributes actually an empty San Siro to allowing a lot of these players that maybe played with a bit of heaviness. Think of Hakan Çalhanoğlu, right? That wasn't exactly a fan favorite. Wasn't playing that well when the fans were in attendance. How much better he's been since post-lockdown. All the young players as well that, you know, you hear players like, I think of Christian Vieri, who's told us in the past so many times that there's only a certain kind of player that can thrive at Inter or Milan. When there's 88,000 people packed into San Siro and you hear the anthem and you're there and you see the cloud of smoke from the Curva Nord and the Curva Sud, your legs will tremble. And it's if you can play at your best, feeling that immense pressure. And you can imagine that some of the young players that are 20, 21, that, you know, think of Haugo, just came from Bodø/Glimt, now playing in a packed derby della Madonnina. That is an amazing, heavy pressure that these young players haven't really had to face since coming over in the summer. And it seems like Pioli thinks, you know what, we're just getting started. And this team is only on the way up and they're only going to get better. This is a real amazing, exciting time for Milanisti that have been in pain for so long.
I think
I'm saying, Mina, they seem to keep finding a way and it's becoming harder to doubt them. Or is it? Are there any signs that maybe we could doubt them?
It's interesting you say that because I was about to say the difference between them and Inter and Juventus and Roma as well, the teams that are chasing them at the moment, is that their mentality is that we have to get this win. And I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to just find a way of doing it. And I do think Lazio made it a little bit easy for them at the end when they took off Milinkovic-Savic and Ciro Immobile, something that they did against Club Brugge, not sure always how to pronounce it. No one knows, right? In the Champions League, and again caused them a lot of problems, and it was a really scary 15 minutes for them. Were they going to be in the Champions League? Were they not? And they did it again against Milan, and unfortunately for Lazio, they don't have the squad depth to be able to take off two such great players and hope that they can still be commanding on the pitch. And Milan, with all the desire to make sure that they win this match, considering what Inter had done before at 6 p.m., they wanted to do something and they managed to get there. It's that mentality that pushes them forward. It's the fact that, you know, Stefano Pioli will come onto the pitch and unite them all to say happy holidays and Merry Christmas before we all separate and you all go see your family. It's the wonderful harmony. But I also think it was really interesting in the post-match comments when Pioli came out and actually took... He has a certain arrogance to him, and the way that he plays with his play, the way that he talks to his players, he demands a lot from them. He's not so easygoing as he appears to be, and he also doesn't think he is the normal one. He does actually rate himself quite highly, but he has a sense of humility that makes him so lovely to talk to. And he came out afterwards and said, I made Salamakis sit deep when we should have been more aggressive and going forward. And he recognized that that was his fault. He had made a mistake on a tactical level. And it's something I wish other coaches would do. I think Gattuso does that really well, but it's taking responsibility for where it went wrong, trying to learn from it. And you just know that he won't make that mistake again because he's so clever. He's such an intelligent man overall. And I think that's what makes the difference. But having said all of that, I thought Lazio were fantastic. They controlled the game for large portions of it. I cannot imagine this team that can play so well would not finish the season in the top five, maybe not make Champions League necessarily, but based on their performances, they haven't always won, but they are always a side that I think when you compare them to teams like or around them, they're very, very good. It's a shame that they haven't been collecting the points. And I felt really sorry for them yesterday.
I agree with that totally. I think that Inzaghi unfortunately carries this one because I think that if Immobile and Milinkovic-Savic stay on the pitch, it could easily be a different outcome. And it was like for those last 15 minutes, I don't think Lazio were dominating at that point, but you took away their teeth. You took away the chance they had to get that winning goal. And it did feel to me like, very understandably, for all the reasons I outlined at the top, Milan were a little bit running out of gas. Milan were a little bit sort of just trying to get to the finish line of this year. And then when those two went off, it just gave them a crack. It gave them a reason to think maybe Lazio are the team settling here and we have a chance to do something. So I do think Lazio gave them a window, which they didn't have to. There was one sort of specific moment I wanted to talk about in this game because I think it's just... in the end, not that consequential, but it was just a moment of really like high quality football isolated, which was the penalty that Immobile takes that is saved by Donnarumma, which is a perfectly good shot, pretty decent penalty, really well saved. Yeah. And Alberto is just so sharp to win that header and to also put it on target. And I think it was just like a little bubble of what I thought of this game. This game was hugely fun. Great quality whilst also looking like it was between two teams that I thought probably are both very grateful now to have a few days stop and get some energy back in their legs.
Yeah, Lazio are actually looking difficult to count out and they always seem to be able to rise to the occasion. But as it stands, it's Milan going into the break as the leaders, as they pretty much have been all season. So Inter may not be finishing out 2020 as leaders. Almost, they were close, but they do just keep on keeping on. They're getting the job done. Matteo, you were on the call for their latest game.
Yeah, and it was a really terrible start, I thought. The first half was void of any sort of excitement. I actually had a bit of a problem with the original formation that Conte went with. I don't like to get too much into X's and O's and get too much into numbers, but in this 3-4-3, right, that Conte started with only two central midfielders, Brozovic and Barella. I think that hurts Barella so much more. And you could see that Hellas Verona, they were getting to the final third with so much ease. They were just going right through the two central midfielders. Normally, Inter have a third, whether it's Gagliardini or Vidal or Sensi or whoever. But the biggest difference is that when you have three central midfielders, Barella, who's one of Inter's best players, can get forward, can be dynamic, can join the attack. And that's what Inter were missing. Perisic wasn't really in the game. Lautaro was slightly wide. I thought Lukaku was brilliant, as he has been most games. But I think that this formation, which mirrored what Hellas Verona went with, really hurt Barella. It didn't really allow Inter to have any sort of superiority in the midfield. And it took out one of their best players from doing what he's done so well this season. And that was my biggest gripe. But look, in the end, when you have Lukaku and you have his ability to hold a play, to set up great chances, he is a man mountain when he receives the ball. You cannot move him. I thought his runs were very good. I thought he was very active off the ball. And Inter owe a lot to his performance. And it's easy when you're playing a team that has no strikers in Hellas Verona. There's no one there in the front line that scares you. You know they're organized. You know they defend well. But you have these two kids who score one or two goals a season so far that just aren't really going to be the threat to really cause any sort of problems. And that's exactly what we saw, is Inter's defense dominated the front line of Hellas Verona. The only mistake came from Samir Handanovic with a shocking blunder. I have no idea what he was trying to do, if he was trying to parry the ball, if he was trying to catch it, but whatever it was, uncharacteristically bad from Handanovic.
Mina?
Here's the thing with Inter. It's really hard to criticize a team that's now won 7 consecutive games in Serie A. And they have. And they found a way through. And you can only applaud it because that's what Antonio Conte does so well. He doesn't always dazzle you, but he's out of Europe. He doesn't need to play entertaining attacking football. He needs to get the job done. And when it comes to getting the job done, there's nobody better than Antonio Conte. When it comes to actual convincing performances, if I go through, I don't know, the last 6, I can only really think of Bologna as being one that I thought that they were very good at. Because against Torino, they were losing. And then they got those two quick 5 goals because they bullied their way through. And then you look at against Sassuolo, they were 2-0 up in 14 minutes because I don't know what happened to Sassuolo in the beginning, much as what happened against Milan, I guess. Against Cagliari, they were losing up until the 77th minute. Against Napoli, they had a man sent off. It became a lot easier for Inter to find a way through. Against Spezia, I have to really emphasize this, they were defending in a 4-5-1 against Spezia at the end. I mean, 4-5-1 against a team that has just been promoted, yeah? And I don't even know what to say. Again, Ivan Juric actually disappointed me in this match, to be very honest. I'm glad Antonio Conte won that match because sometimes with Juric, he focuses a lot on neutralizing the game and because he doesn't have that much power going forward. And it makes sense because they were very good in the first half. But I think that they lost a lot of gas towards the towards the latter half of the second half. And it became difficult for them to keep up. And I don't think they managed to cut off the passages of play and as well as, let's say, they did against the likes of other teams, against Juventus, against Lazio, whoever you want to mention. But for me, these aren't performances that I think that sort of deserve to win the Scudetto in much the same way that I think is of Milan. But when it comes to consistency and winning, I think they're very good and I would depend on them more than I probably would depend on any other side.
Let me read your tweet, Nikki, that you put out. You put 7 league wins in a row for Inter, 9 points clear of Juventus, Serie A's leading scorers. They don't half concede some silly goals and still make everything harder than it should be. But the big picture domestically looks pretty good at the end of the year.
Right. I think Mina said it pretty well. I do think there was still some sort of I don't know, talking about, oh, well, Hellas didn't cut off the line as it did against other teams. I think there are some points at which this podcast has been a bit too stingy in allowing Conte some credit for making sure that...
No, it's because you're too overflowing in your compliments for him.
what you just said, and as I put in that tweet, is true. They've won 7 games in a row. Teams that Hellas Verona have not given a win to this season... Milan, Juventus, Roma, Lazio, Sassuolo. This team has taken points off, actually not Sassuolo, they lost to Sassuolo, Atalanta, but they took points Atalanta. This team has consistently taken points off good teams. And actually, exactly as Matteo just said, the only reason that this game even had a bit of jeopardy at the end was because Handanovic did something singularly ridiculous. It was a bizarre moment that I mean, I've said on this podcast before, I'm worried about him for Inter, but this was still, even in the context of that, just an odd moment. And look, It isn't sparkling. It isn't the story that's easy to root for, because you know what's easy to root for is a team full of kids playing exciting football that is, inspires you and makes you think of the future. This is, we've brought together a bunch of, some of them borderline over the hill players, and we are squeezing everything out of them in a way that is not always easy on the eye. But you don't win seven games in a row in Serie A without playing good football.
I'm sorry, Nikki, I'm going to take issue with that. Border over the hill players. We're talking about what? Ashley Young? Yeah, because that's, we're talking, Barella is the best midfielder. Yeah.
Ashley Young and Arturo Vidal.
Okay,
and
Raja
Nainggolan,
who's
wound up back there playing football.
He hasn't played.
And Ivan Perisic and Alexis Sanchez.
So then we need to name Sami Khedira. So then we need to name these types of players as well for other teams. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're not going to get away with that. Skriniar is one of the best defenders. De Vrij is one of the best defenders. Bastoni is the best young defender, okay?
You misunderstood my point. I'm not saying that Conte doesn't have good players to work with. That's not what I was saying.
And a forward line that you say one of them is a top five striker. Your words, yeah, mine was Benzema, thank you. The top five striker, yeah, that you think that...
Lukaku is.
He said that. You're right. He said that himself. Lautaro Martinez, who's followed and is valued at over 100 million. I mean, we're talking about a very good team. So there's no over the hill players here.
You misunderstood my point. Because I'm not saying that this team hasn't got the quality to win a title. And I think the expectations for them should be far ahead of where Milan's are. There's no question on that. That's not what I was getting at. My point was that if you're a neutral, watching Milan is compelling and exciting. And I think that looking at what Inter have done, bringing in these players who are at the end of their career, perhaps, who are might still get the job done. I'm not saying they're bad players either, by the way.
Who's at the end of their who?
Vidal, Sanchez, Perisic, I would argue, Nainggolan, Young, who you mentioned. These are all players who've been quite...
past their prime, absolutely.
It's like that of every other team. Every team is carrying passengers like that, except for Milan.
But I think because this has been a criticism that we've all made of Conte's transfer policy, that he goes after these players who are at this point in their career, who are not the future. It's so focused on doing something right now. I'm surprised you're even disagreeing with me on that.
I think it's a criticism of Conte. Over the summer, right? Isn't that the whole point? Is that he changed it over the summer? He got rid of Godin. He got rid of, like, you know, the older players, you know, Borja Valero. He did. That's the whole point. They lowered the average age. Well, you look at the team, and up front, Lukaku's young, Lautaro Martinez is very young, Barella's young, Sensi's young, Brozovic is only, 28? So, you know, you look at this team, and then Bastoni's young, De Vrij is young, Skriniar's young. The starting lineup, even if you throw in Ambrosio, barring Ashley, Hakimi's young. They got rid of the old ones. So this is what it is. Conte got everything he wanted in the summer. So there is no, I'm not willing to hear any excuses, sorry.
I think you're, disagreeing with the point that I'm not making, though. I think you're disagreeing with the point that I think you're sort of painting this as me saying that this team shouldn't win, which I don't think. I think he's got everything he wanted. It's just that what he wanted is not exciting. It's not a fairy tale. It's
not his
really
tactics,
expensive.
Not because of the players. I think the players are stupendous, and I think they should be playing better football than just throwing out wide and hoping for a cross to come in and Lukaku can get on the end of that. It's because of his tactics. It's not because they have over-the-hill players. That's my point in all of this.
I feel like we're talking about the early part of last decade with Juventus, where the same exact things were said, where they have brilliant players, but it just wasn't fun to watch, right? Yes, that was one of the criticisms, is why is Conte playing a back three against, I don't know, Ascoli or whoever, when you should be dominating, you should be putting that extra attack or the extra midfielder. Even now, Inter could be playing a completely different style. They actually have the players, if they wanted to play one of the best styles in all of Italy, right? If you had Sensi and Barella and Brozovic and Eriksen and Sanchez and Lautaro and Lukaku, this could be a team under a completely different 180 style manager with philosophy that would play a brilliant style of football. This style of football isn't that pleasing on the eyes for the most part, but Conte's shown throughout his career that it is brutally effective. And in the end, you don't get trophies for aesthetically pleasing football. You might get more fans, and you might get people who, in the end, they want to escape from the rigors of 2020 by watching something entertaining. And that normally has not been Inter, which is unfortunate. But then Inter fans could also say, on the end, it is fun to win. It's fun to win trophies. It's fun to have these big objectives. So it's one of those where you're not going to make everyone happy. And, you know, in 2020, football is about, if you play good football, that's when you're lauded and praised on Twitter. And Inter right now aren't really that team. But it's hard to argue that that it hasn't been brutally effective, because that's exactly what it's been. And it looks like I still have them right now as the favorites to win the Scudetto.
So let's move on to talk about Napoli, because they did win their appeal to play Juve, but they didn't take 3 points in either of their last two games. There are some big players missing, granted, but they couldn't recover from back-to-back defeats against the bottom of the table side in Torino. So Mina, what's going on?
Yeah, it seems, I said last week that I'm sort of a little bit over them at the moment. It just seems like they're always a little bit too slow, not cynical enough, not efficient enough. It's like when you watch Lazio, they're not necessarily always beautiful, but you just always rely on them to find a way. And I can't say that is true of Napoli. Napoli are a team that can create a lot of chances, not necessarily know how to finish them off. And I just always felt like this is why I didn't put them in my top four. There's always that ability of them to disappoint, and they've done this under so many coaches. But to be frank, I'm, as much as I love Gattuso and I feel like he's trying so hard with his team, and he has his alibis in the sense that obviously Dries Mertens is not there, neither is Victor Osimhen, so it becomes a little bit harder to score the goals that you want to score. The club overall has not been, you know, I think them winning that appeal is, for me, very disappointing. People will think it's because I'm a Juventus fan. I have really, honestly, if anything, I think that it will do wonders for my job to watch that actual game. Juventus will make money from just simply the advertisement of such a big game. So it's not really a loss to Juve so much, but a loss to the protocol that everyone had agreed to. This sets a bad precedence, in my opinion. The whole point is that Lazio, Inter both had to deal with so many COVID cases. So did Genoa, so did Milan. And the fact is that everyone traveled, everyone did their job, everyone agreed to the protocol. I can see Matteo just getting angry with me.
No, I disagree that it sets a bad precedence. I feel like I keep hearing this, right? But we haven't seen it anywhere else in Italy. And I keep thinking that if it's such a bad health situation, right, where people think that someone's genuinely at risk, or, you know, you have the whole team out, you're going to just take the forfeit, right? Because the health reasons should trump any sort of sporting reasons whatsoever. So is it really a bad precedence? Because we haven't seen it anywhere else really in Europe. I mean, it just happened that one time with Napoli. I mean, if Genoa said, you know what, our whole team is out, we'll just take the forfeit, this is crazy. But they didn't do that. So I just don't see any other teams now, especially with the situation not being as bad as it was in the beginning of fall in Italy. I don't think it really sets any precedence now that things in 2021 are expected to get better, and other teams, I mean, we're not going to see a situation like Genoa where basically the whole first team was out and they still played. I don't feel like that's going to happen again. And I feel like the worst is over in Serie A. If we didn't see teams traveling before, I don't think it's going to happen now for the rest of the season.
So why do they get to dictate when they should play when other teams haven't had that luxury?
But the CONI, the National Olympic Committee, right, that seems like a pretty trustworthy source to look over all the reviews. I mean, they said that there were holes in the original ruling that was given out that gave such a harsh penalty.
CONI always finds holes. They always overturn. Come on, let's be honest. CONI always overturns
decisions.
But
how can we be so stringent with such an unprecedented situation? Like these laws or rules, they were created 2 months before.
All of a sudden, Napoli care more about their healthcare than everyone else does. When Gattuso had to come out after Maradona's death and say, please, can we all be a little bit more sensible about the way that we're behaving in Naples? I think the people of Naples
have nothing to do with the team.
My point is, of all this, is that I don't believe that it is the... At the end of the day, the initial ruling was the fact that they were not planning on traveling well before local authorities had told them not to. That was what was written in the report. And that is the one that I go by. Whether they find holes when or not, I don't think it's fair that other teams had to travel and deal with it when they didn't. Again, if they won this, it's good that they didn't get a point deduction. It's good that we get to watch the game on a lot of other ways, and I'm happy with that. But frankly speaking, I don't think it's very fair to the other teams that Napoli get to dictate when and where they play, and they can say it's the local authority banned us. But I understand that other people say health matters overtake it, or whatever it is, are more important. I don't know. I don't think that's the reason for it. But again, this is me just being suspicious.
Quickly, because I think this is like quite an important point on this. You've sort of alluded to it there, but this is the discrepancy we're talking about. It's not that Napoli, at least in the version of events that is allowed this to be a successful appeal, it's not that Napoli are saying we should have the right when we think it's not safe to travel. Napoli's defense, their argument, their entire case they brought through the appeals, which, as Mina has pointed out, twice were rejected, but Coney accepted. The basis of their appeal is that the local health authority told us not to travel. Now, you can believe that or not believe that. I'm not telling anyone to believe anything, but that is the argument that we're actually looking at here. The argument is not that a football team can say unilaterally, we're not going. The argument is, was there a local health judgment here? And if there is a local health judgment here, does that supersede the protocol that is put in place, which was agreed at the start of the season between all of the sort of relevant football bodies, between the federation, between the league, between Italy's scientific technical committee, which reports to the government? So that's what we're actually talking about. I think some of these conversations make it sound like it's just Napoli got to choose, they didn't do something. That's never been Napoli's argument. No, Napoli's argument is, we were told this thing.
All right, there's lots of topics we need to get through quickly to end out the show. And I will just start by mentioning that there was two games without Papu Gomez for Atalanta. Great win for Atalanta in the first of those, but then they gave up a 2-0 lead against Bologna to draw in the second. So we will find out what Atalanta are without Papu, because it does look as though he is going. We'll keep our eye on that. But just quickly, because the first win that they had was over Roma, Mina, that's where I'd like to go, because Fonseca said afterwards that it was men against boys. And we've seen that Roma do have the tendency to lose in the big games in a big way, Roma, Napoli, Atalanta. But then they went and followed up that result with the win over Cagliari. They are third, though. So what do we make of them this season?
Yeah, I also think that's a little bit harsh, because they got a draw against Milan and they were very good in that match. They got a draw against Juventus suit too, so I'm not going to say that. But I do think they are a little bit mentally fragile. And you saw that very clearly against Cagliari. It's almost like when they couldn't find their second goal, they just started to wander, and then Cagliari equalized and you could see them being really nervous about everything. And Fonseca had to intervene and change it all up in his defensive schemes and get them back in the game with Dzeko and then Mancini. There is a little bit of a fear coming from them at the moment. They don't seem very confident of their ability like they did at the start when they were just playing for fun. Now it looks like everything's riding on them. Having said that, they're in third place. I do think it's a little bit over dramatic, some of the reports that came out against them losing to the big clubs. I think things can happen necessarily. We have to judge this only at the end of the season.
Yeah, and Fonseca was looking remarkable, I must say, with his cap on the sidelines in this one. Someone else we must mention, and Matteo, I'll ask you this, Sassuolo finishing 2020 right up there with the big boys. Any coincidence that Caputo comes back and they get their first win in three?
Oh, they've been desperately needing Caputo. He's the only striker that they have that is capable of scoring over 20 goals. It's remarkable what he's done. A guy who spent his whole 20s in Serie B finally gets a chance in the top flight and becomes this amazing volume goal scorer that fits so well. Sassuolo have done really well to hold on to the likes of Locatelli and Jeremy Boga and Berardi and Caputo. And they have so many players that are worth a lot of money now. I'm very curious to see how they deal with the next two transfer windows, because they could really cash in if they wanted to. I hope they don't.
Nikki,
give me Locatelli.
Locatelli. We were going so hard on Juve earlier in the show, it seems, that we forgot to give Prandelli all the praise for this win.
Yeah, I think Prandelli, it's a long way to go till he proves that he can do this job and get Fiorentina back where they belong. But this was a great night, and he does deserve credit for getting a lot of things right. I think there's this beautiful symmetry. The last time Fiorentina, who, as we alluded to, like to think of Juventus as their great rival, but in reality never beat Juventus, so it's a very one-sided rivalry. They had not won away to Juventus since 2008. They scored three goals that game as well. And Cesare Prandelli was the manager. So definitely some love coming from Florence for Cesare Prandelli right now, I think.
Yeah, and he said it was coming. So we'll see if they can carry this into the new year. Davide Berardini is back. He wins 2-1 away to Spezia on his return to Genoa. No coincidence there either, surely.
This is such a weird thing. Is Berardini collecting four different paychecks from Genoa now? Because he's been there four times, it feels. It doesn't feel like a proper Genoa season until you see Berardini waltzing on in with his aviators and his beanie and that whole look that he has there. We know that it's going to end for Berardini in a few months, and then he's going to get paid for who knows how much longer. It's a mess, Gino. It's an absolute mess.
Didn't Preziosi come out at the time and say he's a terrible coach? So it's like, what?
Oh, he has berated Ballardini on multiple occasions.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's weird that the guy keeps accepting this comeback. But
well, it's not like there was a huge market for Ballardini. I don't think there was like a wait list of teams vying for his services. It's either Genoa or you're back home.
Okay, can't live with him, can't live without him. I wonder if any of you have got wishes for 2021 and going into the next part of the season. Nikki, is there anything you'd really like to see? Because personally for me, I'm just hoping, and I'm sure I can speak for all of us, that this is a title race that does go right down to the wire in the Serie A.
Yeah, just one more quick note before I go on to the wishes, which is Pippo Inzaghi at Benevento.
Yes.
10th in the table. They've only lost once in the last 7 games. You're talking about a team who Gianluca Caprari is your star player. This is pretty impressive managerial job being done by Pippo right now. So last mention for 2020.
Why? Do you know why, Nikki? Because I think that ever since Matteo said that they're a terrible team, they took that.
That's true.
They put it on their wall in the dressing room. And since then, they're like, listen, we're going to improve to Matteo.
You can hire him to give these commentator curse types or the reverse commentator curse type comments. But yeah, Nikki, do you have any wishes then for the season going forward?
I think mine's pretty similar to what you just said, Kay. I want a real title race. I want as many teams as possible involved in it. But I can't deny that I hope that 2 of those teams are the Milan clubs, because it is exciting to see the 2 teams from not the capital city, but I guess the big industrial center of Italy that have been historically the most successful clubs, along with Juventus, to see them back after so long, almost a decade, it feels like, since those clubs have really been relevant in this title race, other than very occasionally. It's exciting. It's exciting to have that rivalry. And my extra super crossing fingers dream for everybody is that we get that title race, and at least towards the end of the title race, the medical science allows us to get fans back in the stadium to see it, because that's what I think everyone really wants.
And that was my dream for 2021, is that the world gets back to a safer place. And Stefano Pioli said it after the Milan game. Could you imagine San Siro yesterday? Can you imagine how amazing it would be for these fans that have suffered for so long to pack the stadium and to see a side that is right now first during Christmas? So that's my biggest wish, is for the fans to be back, for it to be just like normal, to hear the Curva Sud and Curva Nord and all the curve across Italy going nuts, because it is some of the best atmospheres when these stadiums are packed.
Mina?
God, I just feel now I have to say world peace based on these two. I guess for everyone to be really nice to each other, I don't know.
But just not on this show.
So I kind of hope, for the sake of Freddie, our producer, as well as Tom, that Genoa get relegated, so that he'd be really happy with all of this. I do love, can I just say, I love having a strong Juve Milan Inter. It kind of feels like old times, back in the day when it was always those 3 fighting it out and throwing mud at each other. I want it to be that way. I'm sorry, much love to Sassuolo and Atalanta, but I do also like it being Lazio and Roma coming up behind them, being the teams that also impress us. I love it all. And to be honest, that every team right now, barring maybe, you know, your Genoas or your Parmas, have been so interesting to watch. And I hope that continues, where we have new tactical schemes and strategies and everyone always impressing us. And you never know what's going to happen. Is Roma going to win 4-0 or are they going to concede 7-2? You never know. And this is what makes Serie A so awesome. But I do want that to continue, because right now the level of play, the level of tactical intelligence in this game, the technique that we're seeing, it's such a great, great year for Italian football, and long may it continue.
Yes, long may it continue. And thank you so much to all of our listeners. We do wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, a Happy New Year. And we will be back when the Serie A is back in 2021. But for now, from Nikki, Mina, from Matteo, myself and our production team, ciao for now.